Maybe seated. I guess that's obvious. Our third case is 14-532, Kent and Sue Cunningham versus Joseph W. Testa. For the appellant, Mr. Fossey.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, the BTA in this case erred by failing to apply the plain language of Ohio's residency.
Move the microphone a little closer. Thank you.
The BTA in this case erred by failing to apply the plain language of Ohio's residency statute for income tax purposes. That's revised code 574724. In critically failing to apply the plain language of the term domicile, this court had the opportunity to look at the term domicile very recently. In fact, the October 2014 opinion in the Schill case surveyed the law regarding domicile in Ohio and announced that one's domicile is one's fixed and permanent home to which one intends to return when away. Now, the court, in announcing that standard for domicile, recognized that this is a long-held standard in Ohio. This is sort of blow-the-dust-off-the horn book standard stuff. And it cited to the 1878 case of Sturgeon versus Court, which already at that time recognized that this is a well-established principle. Now, the Cunninghams in this case have conceded that they meet this standard. They've come out and in their brief said, we don't take any quarrel with this. And in fact, they voted in Ohio. They took the homestead reduction on their real property, their six-bedroom home loan located in Cincinnati, Ohio, based on the statement that that was their primary and permanent residence.
Counsel, is this just about whether or not they get the benefit of the statute that raises an irrebuttable presumption? That's what the quarrel is about, right?
So we're focused in this case on that portion of the statute.
Right.
So
it's, and that applies if one signs an affidavit that they've been outside the state X number of days, unless the commissioner finds that there's something untruthful about the affidavit. Is that
so the affidavit, the requirements for filing the affidavit are that you spend essentially what amounts to essentially more than half the year outside of Ohio, and that you have an out-of-state abode for the entire year. And on top of that, the affidavit expressly, the statute expressly requires that the verified statement indicate that you're not domiciled in Ohio. Now, if by the act of filing the affidavit, you raise a presumption of non-domicile. But what the statute provides is that if that statement is timely and if it's true, then it becomes irrebuttable. So in this case, for instance, when Dr. Cunningham filed a 2008 statement of non-domicile on the form promulgated by the tax commissioner pursuant to this statute, when the tax commissioner found that his wife hadn't filed such a statement and that on their federal return they listed an Ohio residence as her primary address and indicated that their Tennessee home was used for vacation purposes less than 14 days a year, and the fact that they claimed that their Cincinnati home was their homestead and took a tax reduction on it. So
okay.
Wait a minute, something's not right here.
So what we write here is gonna have lots of other folks who don't want to pay income tax in Ohio looking at it.
Sure.
So the basic issue is the Cunninghams don't, in the view of the tax commissioner, don't get the irrebuttable presumption.
Correct.
That would still leave Cunningham the opportunity to actually prove that, in fact, he wasn't in Ohio for the requisite period of time and therefore not required to pay the Ohio income tax.
Correct.
So it just doesn't get the presumption.
Exactly. So the statute's all about presumptions and burdens of proof. And what if you don't get the presumption under B, then we move down to C, where the taxpayer bears the burden, and the presumption is that they are domiciled in the state. Now, the
Mr. Fossey, it doesn't make any difference that his wife didn't file an affidavit, does it?
Well, they were married filing jointly, so that was—
Pardon me?
They filed married jointly, so that was just another indicator that, you know, this
court— But we have many, many people who, some are domiciled in one state and the spouse domiciled in another, so—
Oh,
so
yes.
It doesn't mean, it's not significant in this case that Mrs. Cunningham didn't file an affidavit, is it?
Well, so—
Or am I missing something?
It is significant for the purposes of the common law domicile inquiry, but not for the purposes of her payment of income tax. Certainly, Ohio recognizes that spouses may have different domiciles, and so we're not going to, you know, we recognize that, and you don't have to pay, the spouses don't have to pay tax in a state where they're not domiciled. But for common law domicile purposes, this court has often looked at the location of one's spouse as an indicator of the place you regard your home. So where Mrs. Cunningham is domiciled in Ohio, you know, that is one of the features of common law domicile. Say we'd expect her husband to live with her.
All right, thank you.
Now, he could certainly—
Well, counsel, let me ask you a question. Do they have to have a domicile, or excuse me, an address outside of Ohio?
The statute requires that, yes. So
a permanent address, or in this case, it was Tennessee.
All the statute says is an abode outside the state for the entire tax year.
Okay, so it could be anywhere.
Sure.
It could be a houseboat. It could be floating around the world on a boat or not.
Well, that raises an interesting question of whether the houseboat's an abode. But for purposes of this, let's say it is. But that out-of-state abode wouldn't change your domicile. And this,
right.
Again, this is a well-settled principle. So.
Okay, all right. If I recall correctly from reading this case, they didn't pay state tax anyplace.
That's correct.
On their, unearned income is what we're talking about.
Non-wage
where
income.
You're going to pay tax on your unearned income. Tennessee does have a tax on unearned income, does it not?
They do.
And so too does Ohio, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So the only two places they could pay tax would be for Tennessee or Ohio, is that correct?
I think, under their proposition, they didn't spend enough time in Tennessee to pay tax there. And so Tennessee has a common law domicile standard as well. So they said, we're not common law domiciled in Tennessee. They did say that they spent something like 4 months in Tennessee. But they've admitted that.
Well, I thought it was 14 days on the one statement.
Right. That was a verified statement, a sworn statement they filed on with the IRS. It said they were there for less than 14 days. What they said at hearing contradicted that, that sworn statement to the IRS. The language of the statute is clear here, and everybody who's looked at it hasn't had trouble coming to our result. I mean, the statute, throughout its various divisions, uses the word domicile undifferentiatedly 12 times.
But counsel, if I might focus in on something that I don't think is so clear, where you do say that the statute used domiciled, but under B1, it says was not domiciled in the state under this division. And when you look at the later provisions, that under this division isn't repeated. So the question in my mind is, by using that phrase, did the General Assembly intend to abrogate the common law definition for purposes of that division only? How would you address that question?
Thank you for the question. That's a point I wanted to address. So the language under this division actually does appear in the other subsections. We believe, though, that more importantly, the language under this division is talking about the statement that's filed with the tax commissioner. So what you're saying is, and what the General Assembly is saying is, that statement, that affidavit, that gives you the presumption that you're not domiciled in Ohio, you have to meet the qualifications under this division to get that statement. So you have to have more than half the year outside the state. You have to have an out-of-state abode for the whole year. You have to be not domiciled in Ohio. And that entitles you to the presumption under that division. So, and it can't mean under this division the way the Cunninghams have advanced it, because Section B2 of the statute also uses the term domicile. And that's, B2 is under Division B, so that would, if it's under this division, it would have to apply to B2. But B2 says that domicile can't be for, if you, I'm sorry, Section B2 says if you change domicile during the tax year, you can't file the affidavit. But under their reading of the word, you couldn't change domicile. It wouldn't be possible. You either have the contact periods in the out-of-state abode or you don't. So the B2 would be rendered nonsensical if they're under this division, meant what they say it means. And, you know, furthermore, this statute is about presumptions. And all the Legislative Service Commission analysis has indicated that the BTA has consistently said that, even in the case that predates this one from the Board of Tax Appeals, Maple, they said this statute sets forth certain presumptions but does not change the standard of domicile. The BTA just lost its way in this case in determining that it does.
Counsel, if we find in your favor, do we return this to the board for rehearing?
If you find in our favor, we're done. The tax commissioner issued an assessment. The amount of the assessment was never raised as an issue in the Cunninghams' notice of appeal to the Board of Tax Appeals. So their sole argument in their petition for reassessment was, we're not Ohio.
What was the amount of the assessment?
This was roughly $9,000, a little more than $9,000, and that's tax and interest and penalty.
All right. So, in our Shill case, we indicated to avoid a presumed Ohio domicile, one must seek not only to reside at least 182 days a year outside Ohio, but must also file the affidavit. The affidavit was filed,
mm-hmm.
And did Dr. Cunningham, by evidence, reside outside Ohio 182 days?
I believe the evidence was that he spent more than half the year outside of Ohio, yes.
Okay, so does he meet both presumptions, both elements to generate the presumption?
So the presumption occurs by the act of filing the affidavit, and so it's our view
Well, it's not only that, because we've said it has to be residence outside of Ohio for half the year. It's 182 days, and then filing the affidavit. So he's met both of those elements. Am I right?
Let me be clear. Those are just preconditions for filing the statement that you're actually not domiciled in Ohio. So those aren't, it's not 182 contact periods and out-of-state abode and bingo bango, you get no domicile. It's actually, those are the preconditions for even filing the statement. And what's required on the statement is a verified statement that you're not domiciled in Ohio. So what you're actually affirming, and that's the crucial piece under each section of the residency statute, is that you're actually not domiciled in Ohio. So the act of filing the form creates a presumption that the tax commissioner administratively by the General Assembly is told, if somebody's filed this form, presume they're not domiciled in Ohio. That means now the tax commissioner, you're gonna accept that unless it's false or unless it was not timely filed.
They have all this other indicia of the fact that this was false. And they didn't have another domicile that they could hang their hat on.
Correct.
And so, you know, there's a difference. You know, back to my question about taking a boat or, you know, whatever. If you spend 200 days a year on vacation, but you still have your house in Ohio, you're still domiciled in Ohio, even though you did not spend more than half the year out. You still have taxes and everything else you owe. So unless you can show another domicile, and in this case, they're arguably they could not, given their other statements for other purposes on the record under oath.
That's correct. And Your Honor, there's an 1873 case about a traveling salesman from Ireland. was assessed locally here in Ohio.
Careful here. And,
well, and the court said that despite the fact that, and this was, you know, before jet planes, and, you know, he would have had to take a steamboat trip to get here, and he lived here for years, but the court said he didn't have a permanent, fixed and permanent home in Ohio. He intended to return to Ireland, and that was his domicile. So, I mean, these are
perfectly like, understandable. Yeah,
so is there evidence of the intent to return in the record?
Evidence of the intent to return to Ohio?
Yes.
Certainly. They voted here during the tax year. They maintain their six-bedroom residence. Their children are here. It's the place they regard as home. And for all intents and purposes, they've conceded that. The burden is, you know, even their
you're
dogs
saying
are registered in Hamilton County.
You're saying they've conceded their intent to return to Ohio? Is that what you're arguing?
I'm sorry?
Did you just say that they have conceded their intent to return to Ohio?
Yes, by conceding the common law, that they meet the common law domicile standard, they've conceded that. And like I said, even their dogs are registered there, so if their dog is lost, they got to go to Hamilton County to get it back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Motley.
Morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, I'm Don Motley. Can you hear me?
We can,
okay,
yes.
Thank you. Well, good morning. May it please the court, I'm Don Motley, representing the taxpayers, Kent and Sue Cunningham. We are asking that you affirm that part of the Board of Tax Appeals decision that found that Dr. Kent Cunningham is not domiciled in Ohio for income tax purposes only, based on the bright line residency test of Ohio Revised Code section 5747.24b.
Where is he domiciled?
For tax purposes only, he's domiciled in Tennessee. And the reason for that is he, first of all, the bright line test does not require a domicile outside of Ohio. It only requires that there be at least one. There actually can be multiple under the statute, places of abode outside of Ohio. And the bright line test is not about where the person's bright line or where their common law domicile is or is not. It's about whether they will be treated as a resident of Ohio for income tax purposes only. It specifically says.
I thought the bright line test was simply a presumption. You get this irrebuttable presumption. And the tax commissioner says, but you don't get it if you are not truthful. So you don't get the presumption. And then you're back to the common law.
That is correct, but let's look at what it means by being truthful. What 5747.24b requires is a statement, and this will go back to Justice French's question, that the taxpayer was not domiciled in Ohio. It doesn't say was domiciled at a specific place outside of Ohio. It says was not domiciled in Ohio under this division. It is our position that in creating this, the General Assembly did intend to create a different test for income tax residency or domicile only for people that qualify under this provision. And if we look at the structure of Section 5747.24, it divides taxpayers into categories based on how many Ohio contact periods they have.
Doesn't it really just relate to who has the burden of proof when the issue is disputed by the tax commissioner?
Well, of course.
If you get the statute, the benefit of the statute, then the tax commissioner's got the burden of proof. If you don't get it, your client's got the burden of proof. Isn't that all it's about?
Justice Pfeiffer, it is about burden of proof, except we have to remember here the General Assembly used the word irrebuttable presumption. So that is saying that if the taxpayer shows that he fits within this category that's described in 5747.24b, that's all he has to prove, that none of the other factors that would be considered in determining common law domicile
would
be admissible.
So how did he prove that?
How did he prove that? First, as required by the statute, he presented overwhelming evidence that he had spent less than 182 days in Ohio.
Where was he for the
He was, for about 5 months, was in Tennessee, and for the rest of the time was traveling. And he presented to the BTA, and they found that he had met that requirement.
So was he domiciled in Tennessee?
For income tax, for Ohio income tax purposes, we would say he was.
For Tennessee income tax?
Well, their standard is different. They actually have a bright line test that favors the state, not the taxpayer. So their bright line test is if you're here 6 months, then you're...
He's only there 4 months, you say.
Therefore,
so he doesn't have to pay taxes in Tennessee. He doesn't have to pay taxes in Ohio.
That's correct.
So where does he pay taxes on his income? No place?
Well, it's not a requirement of the statute that he pay taxes on his income to qualify for a presumption of non-Ohio domicile. He could be domiciled in Florida or in another state that has no income tax.
True, but he's not.
But he is not, nor does he claim that he is. On his affidavit, he was asked, where is, your domicile, which, by the way, the statute doesn't require. The statute says only you have to say that for income tax purposes only, under this division, the bright line test division, I am not domiciled in Ohio.
Counsel, I guess what I want to back you up a couple paragraphs.
Sure.
I'm still troubled by the statutory use of the word irrebuttable. Mm-hmm. Once the doctor said I was not here, mm-hmm. 182 days, and once he established that he had an abode in Tennessee, isn't the inquiry over?
Well, he also has to file the affidavit. And he also has to list on that affidavit all of his non-Ohio domicile. So at that point, yes, under the irrebuttable presumption, the inquiry is over. And I would point out...
Wait a minute. Before you go leave that, what I asked opposing counsel was that if he has an Ohio house and for 200 days out of the year he's vacationing outside of Ohio, would you agree that he is still domiciled in Ohio?
Again, under common law, he may or may not be, but under the bright line test, he actually could be, because what the bright line test focuses on is not how much time the taxpayer spends at another domicile. It only requires that there actually be another residence outside the state for the entire year, which is admitted here, and that he or she spend less than 182 days in Ohio.
So it doesn't matter about the intent to return to a domicile, a fixed place where that is the definition of domicile is not entered into here.
The common law definition is not entered into here because, among other things, if it were, then that whole division would be unnecessary. Because Division C already says, well, if you spend less than 182 days in Ohio, and regardless of whether you even had a place outside Ohio for the entire year.
So you could be vacationing for, around the world for 185 days, and you don't owe tax in Ohio, even though your only home would be Ohio.
That's not true, because the statute also requires that there be a place of abode. So that would only be true if...
You have to have a vacation home.
They would have to have a vacation home or they have to have a place of abode within the meaning of the statute. And, yes, the taxpayer could, because there are taxpayers that are in that situation that do travel in a given year.
Counsel, if we could go back to the language of the statute, under this division,
yes.
Which, as you said, I asked your friends on the other side about, and the response was that under two, where if you were changing, that if you try to put those two together and interpret those words as in a limited way, as you suggest, it doesn't work. Can you respond to that? And if you could use the words bingo bango, that would be really good if you could respond.
Justice French, bingo bango, but we'll start with those work together for this reason, that B2, subdivision B2, because it's division B, is dealing with what the regulations and the instructions call a part-year resident, and that arises in a situation where someone moves into or out of Ohio. So if someone had a residence in Ohio and they move out during the year, they are a part-year resident. So they change residence. That is not the case here because these taxpayers both filed as and were accepted by the department as bright-line non-residents of Ohio in 2007, and they own this home, this out-of-state home, the entire year. So that's not the fact here. So that does fit together because it says, It's reiterating, I think, the requirement that there be a home outside during the entire year, and it's trying to distinguish us from a situation where someone moves in or out. They didn't move in or out this year. They were considered non-residents of Ohio for income tax services the prior tax year. And we're accepting.
Is it conceivable, in your view, that Dr. Cunningham could have different domiciles in different states in different years?
Justice O'Connell, yes, for Mrs. Cunningham, that may very well happen, because in 2007, under identical facts except that she filed the affidavit, the department accepted her as a non-resident of Ohio for income tax purposes. In 2008, she did not file the affidavit, perhaps through inadvertence, but he did. And so when the Board of Tax Appeals analyzed this situation, they said, okay, Mrs. Cunningham, you didn't file the affidavit, so we're not going to evaluate whether you are a domicile under Division B. We're going to look at Division C, where the burden is on you to prove, under the common law rules, that you are not domiciled in Ohio. And so, yes, and it is possible for it to change from year to year, because, after all,
I thought the domicile was the place of permanent residence to which you intended to return. And you could have as many residences as you wished in as many states as you chose, but there's only one domicile, and that is the place that you intend to return. And that's why we get into the indicia of where do you vote, where do you register your dog, and all the rest of these elements that might help us determine the permanent residence to which you intend to return. And if I understood what you said, Dr. Cunningham might change his mind every year as to where he intended to return.
Justice O'Donnell, he could only change his mind every year with regard to Ohio income tax, whether he wished to be treated as a resident of Ohio for income tax purposes every year, based on whether he files the affidavit. I mean, we certainly would admit that if he doesn't file the affidavit.
And you think that's what this statute means, that we'll let the taxpayer decide whether he or she chooses to be domiciled in Ohio on whatever tax year it is.
Justice O'Donnell, it does, provided that the other criteria are met, which are that the taxpayer had a home outside Ohio or a place of abode outside Ohio for the entire year, that the taxpayer had the required number of contact periods outside Ohio. And by the way, the General Assembly just raised that to 213. So the General Assembly now thinks you can be a bright-line non-resident even though you spend most of your time in Ohio. They apparently think it's something different from bright-line residency just by that act. But yes, if they do that, and they also list their non-Ohio domicile, our position is yes, it's a bright-line, it's an irrebuttable presumption. It was intended to be a safe harbor separate from the other parts of the statute. Because if it's not, it's not meaningful. If the taxpayer can only get a bright-line presumption, an irrebuttable presumption of non-residency, if they can affirmatively prove that they are a resident of the common law rule, then we don't need Division B. The General Assembly would have committed a futile act in enacting Division B, and the taxpayer who goes through the additional step of verifying a non-Ohio domicile for the entire year and timely filing the statement would be in no different position than a taxpayer in a Division C, because they would still, under the tax commissioner's view, that taxpayer would still have to be prepared to prove, under the common law rules, all those facts and circumstances that they are domiciled outside Ohio under the common law rule. And that would make this meaningless. This is a bright line. It's a safe harbor. It was, we believe, intended to create a different standard.
What's the significance of the homestead exemption filing?
Chief Justice O'Connor, we don't think it has any significance with regard to this. First, as the Board of Tax Appeals found, they are different standards. They said that the homestead exemption filing requires that the taxpayer state where the primary residence is.
It's called the principal place of residence.
Principal place of residence. And after all, in these facts, the taxpayer did spend more time in Ohio than at any other particular residence, so they felt that they qualified. There's a second fact here that, and I see I'm running out of time, that is significant I think, because Mrs. Cunningham did not file an affidavit. The home was actually in Mrs. Cunningham's name as trustee. She's the one that was required to sign the that form, and although Dr. Cunningham co-signed, he wasn't required to. But what the Board of Tax Appeals found, and we agree with them, is it's a different legal standard. In any event, no one has challenged his eligibility for the, or her eligibility for the homestead exemption for that year.
Oh, so she's still getting the homestead exemption.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's not, you know, nobody's
trying
to take that away because they say, I mean, obviously because they believe that's their primary place of residence. They're getting the benefit. If someone had two homes in Ohio, one in Cleveland, one in Cincinnati, could they apply for homestead exemption in both homes?
Chief Justice O'Connor, they could not. In fact, the record shows that Dr. Cunningham actually contacted the Hamilton County Auditor on this issue and said, hey, I have said for income tax purposes that I'm not a resident of Ohio. What is the implication of that for this? And they said, as long as you're not trying to claim the homestead exemption on more than one residence in Ohio, that is not a concern to us. So he could not do that. And it also, they could not both be a primary residence. You know, they would you would presumably look at where he would spend the most time.
Counsel, as I understand procedurally as well, this case is only about Dr. Cunningham, not Mrs. Cunningham, correct?
Justice O'Neill, that is correct because we did not appeal the finding that Mrs. Cunningham was a resident of Ohio. And so we actually would agree with the Attorney General on one small point here, which is that if the court affirms the Board of Tax Appeals interpretation of the statute, under which they held that Dr. Cunningham did meet the requirements of the bright line irrebuttable presumption for non-residency and therefore is not a resident. The Board of Tax Appeals still did not determine what Mrs. Cunningham's tax liability was. And so there would need to be a remand to determine her tax liability. We would agree with them on that. But we would ask that the rest of their decision.
I'm sorry. I thought the Board of Tax Appeals affirmed the tax commissioner as to Mrs. Cunningham.
Justice O'Neill, what the tax commissioner said was that she was a resident, but he did neither the tax commissioner nor the Board of Tax Appeals determined what her tax liability is in the event that she is a resident and Dr. Cunningham is not. So that has never been determined by the Board of Tax Appeals or by the tax commissioner, and so there would have to be a remand to determine what her liability is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor.
Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to touch briefly on the idea of irrebuttable. And the statute, if you look at B, there's sort of a 1, an A, and a B, and then another paragraph. And what it says in 1 is, you file the affidavit, you get a presumption. And what that means to the tax commissioner is, somebody files an affidavit, I'm going to presume they're not domiciled in here. Unless I have a reason to think otherwise, I'm going to presume they're not domiciled here.
But isn't that contrary to the word irrebuttable?
That's my next point, Your Honor. Actually, it's consistent with it because it becomes irrebuttable when it's timely and true. That's the next paragraph under B. So you have a presumption by filing the affidavit, and that's a tremendous protection. My colleague says that this is no effect. Actually, B is a tremendous protection for taxpayers. If you file that affidavit, David, you get a presumption that you're not domiciled in Ohio. Now it's on the tax commissioner to determine that you made a false statement. And 99.99% of the time, the affidavit's going in a box. They're not out there, you know. And if perhaps the tax commissioner has information in his possession, like he did in this case, that you said on your federal income taxes, you spent less than 14 days in the state that you told me you were domiciled in, then I have to presume this is false. And I have to, you told us on your homestead reduction that this is your principal and primary home. So.
Well, they also said that Tennessee was a vacation or a second home.
But on the form, so we have the battle of the forms here. And this just shows, as far as the Cunninghams are concerned, where their domicile depends on the tax consequences of the answer. So they're domiciled in Ohio when they can get a real property tax deduction. They're domiciled in Tennessee when it helps them avoid Ohio tax.
And the question is that permissible? Are there different standards, you know, for how these statutes are on the books and the requirements? And by submitting contradictory evidence, you're not technically violating what the requirements are.
Respectfully, the central inquiry is always domicile. So to reach the taxpayer's reading of this statute, you have to put the statute through sort of a Rube Goldberg machine where you're pulling this lever, looking at this thing over here, look over here. The tax commissioner's reading of the statute is elegant. It's straightforward. It's been understood by virtually everybody until the BTA in this case. And so for those reasons, we'd ask that this court reverse the Board of Tax Appeals and find that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement, gentlemen. You'll be notified of our decisions. Thank you.